Hello and welcome to the Movie Arc, brought to you by the Arc of E Network. My name is Noah.
My name is Gavin.
And we're the Blanchard Brothers. And we're also Bay Boys. What do you think? Trying it out. At least for this episode, we are Bay Boys.
How do you feel about being labeled that by yourself?
In this particular case, I feel quite all right with it.
Okay.
We are here to discuss Six Underground, the latest from the one, the only, Michael Bay. So I thought it was only appropriate, even though, you know, we're trying to do all of our year-end stuff, this one snuck right in here. We haven't done a proper, like, movie arc review in a while.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a mini review of sorts, I'm sure. But we had to get the take from our resident Bay Boy, Mr. Gavin Blanchard. This is your guy? This is two of your guys.
Two of my dudes.
So are you ready to go ahead and go on record and say that this is your number one favorite film of 2019? I mean, this was tailor-made for you. This is your boy getting complete Cate Blanchett with the budget.
Yeah. Total Cate Blanchett.
Yep. And also, Ryan Reynolds basically, you know, doing his thing.
Yeah.
With the scribes of Deadpool behind it all.
Pretty much, yeah, for the most part.
Yeah. I should mention right now, we do have the opening on screen in front of us, and it's kind of hard not to just
sit back and keep watching this movie,
even when it's on mute.
It's so good.
This opening car chase. Whoa. Oh my God. And it does not let up. For basically the first, I like 15 minutes or so,
Something like a little bit of a brief intro,
and then you are just into the action, and it does not stop until it does. And it has to slow down for some plot. But given the nature of the crew of six and like being able to cut back and forth across the past and give you backstories for some characters, not all of them, all of that stuff, it lends to his hyperactive, like, gotta be cutting to something.
Yeah.
But
I'm gonna be interested when IMDb comes out with the average shot length and number of shots, like they normally do in everything. Sorry, you're adding in all this stuff. There's a weird mix of comedy in here that I don't
think...
I don't think it permeates in a lot of other ones recently with him. Now, because, you know, what, 13 hours is really serious. There's some funny bits, and Pablo Schreiber's kind of funny in that, with some of the stuff he says. But the subject matter and, like, the intensity of the movie, it's not necessarily a funny thing. But a lot of, like, that's what I noticed myself, besides the whole shit of it all, like, just watching it last night and just seeing what exactly they've done with... I'm going to say there's probably a good amount of digital on this, but...
There's a lot of digital.
Yeah, but practicality of, like, you know, shots like that, where a motorcycle just gets, you know, run over and body goes flying. Like, that's done pretty much... It's woven in extremely well to where, like, you're within, like, seconds of, okay, when did they cut this? When did they get a green screen? When did this happen? Does it come alive in the edit? Is it all there? And that's the one thing I just always take to heart with any of his stuff. It's like 90% of it is going to be as real as it can be. And I think that's what people don't like. People who make these kind of movies and people who like go to watch them are two different people, because people like me, I love it for the reason why the guys who make these movies with him love it. He's fun to work with. He's everything's real. You want to blow something up, you blow something up, and it's done as real as they can get, like right there in front of the camera with not as much special effects. Really funny that he's kind of was in the beginning a protege sort of George Lucas, known heavily for the green screen and all that. So I always wondered, in learning a little bit from George Lucas, did he want to step away from that and try and do like the original Star Wars trilogy and have everything done as practical as possible? Or You know, what was the desire to go from, we can make this, do this easily with a green screen and special effects, and say, well, you know what, I'd rather have the best cameras I can get and the best crews I can get, because as far as I'm concerned, the crew he works with to do aerial stuff is like one of the best in the business. And some of these shots, I'm having a really hard time to believe that they weren't. You're going to have to be hard-pressed to show me a green screen. I would love to see some behind-the-scenes stuff, making ofs, or, you know, stills even. But, you know, most of it feels as real as it can be. And it shows. And the idea that, again, I go back to it every time we talk about a Netflix movie. It's $150 million. And it's just there for you. Mm-hmm. Not worrying about box office return. Not worrying about anything. It's just there. And I mean, the way this movie is set up, spoilers, I would love it if I got a sequel next year. Or if they filmed like 8 movies all at once and this is just the first one. Or 6 movies all at once and this was just the first one. But either way, it works as its own thing, but it could totally be made into a franchise.
It could. I don't know what the measure of like how successful it is or what justifies like, hey, we'll do a sequel. Has that happened yet with a Netflix movie?
I don't know.
Have they franchised? I mean, obviously they have original series, of course, and Stranger Things is essentially like their summer, like, you know, blockbuster franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
I honestly can't think of another one that's been sequelized,
so that would be a first, but, you know. If that's the ultimate goal in the long con is them to be... Oh, Jesus Christ. We almost need to turn this off because I can't talk about the movie while it's playing. Yeah, man, like, it's so good. There's too much going on just in this opening sequence. I'm usually the more reserved one when it comes to Bay. I love kind of the first half of his career and then think it kind of pretty much goes off the rails aside from Pain and Gain, which I absolutely love, even though I know some people absolutely hate it. And again, I still haven't seen 13 Hours... We were going to get to it, you know, if we ever finished that that show we were working on for a while.
Yeah.
So, I came to this one just excited that, okay, it's another non-Transformers movie. I know he's working in the real world, and I basically had the baseline setup of, like, it's a team. It's a team movie, and Ryan Reynolds is at the center of it. I was like, this has the makings of being something, like, super entertaining and watchable. The story, the plot, and the characters here could care less. Really not invested in any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Think the plot's kind of dumb. This movie is an absolute blast.
Yes.
Regardless.
Yes, that's the best part.
In spite of all of it, it is 110% the most Michael Bay movie ever made.
Yes.
And it's all of the indulgences and eccentricities that he brings to that writ large as they can be, and it's one of those things we talked about in some of our earlier episodes of The Bay of Lynch. Some of it's just undeniable, man. It's mm-hmm. like just the sheer like excess of the filmmaking. I can't do anything but sit back and just go like,
yeah,
just all right, man.
Mm-hmm.
Hats off, chef's kiss. Not, you know, not everything works in here. There's basically three big action set pieces.
Right.
All of which I think are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The emotional beats and the tone is all over the place in terms of like...
Who do you care about?
Do you really want us to care? Is Reynolds cutting the legs out of all of this like intentionally? Is he subverting it in like a Bill Murray kind of way where it's like, well, we don't want to take it too seriously. Like, let's keep it light. But then, you know, the ultimate ending and everything seems to want you to have that kind of that vibe to it. I never feel like the movie quite gets there. At the same time, even as bare bones as some of the characters are, everybody's really fun in this movie.
Yeah.
I enjoy all of the performances, particularly Melanie Laurent. Just
the doctor?
No.
Lawyer. Or the
CIA
spook. The CIA spook, yeah, okay.
Just... steals the movie.
Oh my, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, okay, so yeah, you got number one, Ryan Reynolds, this basically Bruce Wayne, who decides to start fighting evil in the world on his own terms.
Pretty much.
I cannot tell you how much when I fired this up last night at 1 a.m, by the way, mm-hmm. is when I started it because I had to watch Mando first. Have you watched the latest
Mando? No, I'm watching that when I get home. Is it going to blow my mind?
Mark Boone Jr.
What?
Bill Burr.
What?
Clancy Brown.
Are you kidding me?
All in one episode.
Oh! That's the most we've talked about The Mandalorian on an episode or something, and I think that should be the last because I've been itching to speak. I mean, I talked to Zan because he watches them about the same time I do, and we've been talking about Watchmen too. And
oh, Watchmen. It's
been really hard not to just sit there and deep dive everything. So
yeah. Very soon we will record our top 10 TV shows of the year over on the TV Arc. But until you gotta watch Mandalorian now, I just want to talk about that. Sorry.
Yeah.
But anyways, I watched Mandalorian and then I watched this. Started it late. And when I fired up and within the first like 2 minutes, you're basically intro like hero shot of Ryan Reynolds. It's him in a cockpit with a giant Red Bull helmet on. And I was just like, this is basically just like, hey, everything you guys like accuse me of being, fuck you. Like, yep. Yes, this is me, 100%. Product placement on my lead actor in the very first shot of the film. Boom. Here it is. Deal with it.
Oh, and by the way, not a single fucking shot lasts more than 5 seconds. In your fucking face.
The cutting somehow did not bother me in this. I was on board with it. Usually it like breaks my brain if I get too zeroed in on the edits, but I don't know. It just worked for me in this. I saying these two movies even in the same breath, I feel like I'm going to be struck down or something, but this is his Fury Road.
Yeah,
essentially, no, I can see in that. As much as like it's his like complete unfiltered brain on screen. Now, I say that warts and all, even because again, he's not a writer, he's not, you know, involved in that level. But yet, we think of all of these elements as being like Bayisms, just the sense of humor for one, which it feels like Michael Bay humor, even though it's coming from the Deadpool guys, because some of just the reference points, like some of the like 90s and early, they're like, there's a Spice Girls joke in here. There's a It's Britney Bitch yep. joke in here. Like just stuff that I'm like, this feels like the guy who tapped out of like popular culture around the time that he started making the Transformers movies. Mm-hmm. And like, that's his reference points. And I'm like, but this isn't like, are these in the script? Is this stuff he's adding in the edit? Like, what's going on here? But it was him for good and ill, just completely unfiltered.
Oh, wow. In May 2018, Netflix reported it would distribute for what they intend to be a new action franchise with Ryan Reynolds starring as the lead role. I did not know that.
This is also, you could have called it, I guess it's kind of dirty Fast and the Furious. It's R-rated Fast and the Furious
mm-hmm.
to the extent of team, crazy exotic locales, insane action, which again, the Fast franchise has evolved way beyond cars. So to a point where it would incorporate things like what we see in this movie. But this kind of, this is one of the best action movies I've seen in recent memory. Now, again, with all of my glaring issues with it, some of it's just undeniable.
It is the most expensive Netflix movie.
The Irishman doesn't eclipse it.
Nope.
I guess the Irishman's like maybe $10 million.
The film's production shorter. Reportedly costs $150 million, the most expensive film in the Netflix platform.
I thought Irishman was $170, but maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe it's $140.
Maybe. I'm going to look it up.
Okay. Anyways. You want to go through the six? What do you want? Do you want to talk about the other set pieces? What do you want to discuss? Obviously, you loved it. How much did you love it? I don't know. Talk to me some more.
I mean, it instantly jumped across over like most of the back half. I mean, like, Transformers is still good, but I mean, there's it's so. And there's the thing, like, it's not.
Again, another thing. I just bottom line, it's while it is derivative of things, and you know, based on every other kind of teen movie that you've seen, and just kind of subverting some of it and playing into the tropes in other cases, it's still an original movie. And that alone, just seeing him like be outside of a franchise again, is but satisfying in and of itself.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to think about it. He stepped away from that almost 10 years ago, you know? And so to have Pain and Gain and then 13 Hours and then this come out, it's like, you know, we're kind of getting a downturn. We aren't getting as much as often, but at the same time,
watching... He still made 5 of those movies, though.
What?
Transformers, I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, like... yeah. I'm just... But that's the thing. I thought I wanted like the Pain and Gain and 13 Hours to be like, hey, I'm going to scale it back. I'm not going to work with the one crew I work with out of whatever foreign country that's great with skydiving and stuff like that. I'm not going to need them. I'm going to just kind of get really into like what Pain and Gain was, which is like a weird, quirky character study on like how batshit crazy, you know, people in Florida in the 90s were and still are. Who knows? You know, we know he loves that town. Everybody knows he's from there, loves that town. It is what it is. But if I could even try and grasp what all this took to make, I can understand why we're not going to get a bunch of like back to back to back unless he decides. I'm hoping he decides, hey, this was something I did. It's original. I put my own thing on it. I'd like to do another one of these because it was fun. It's grounded in the real world in a sense. So I'm not having to worry about robots and all this. And I don't think he ever makes a movie to give a shit about what people think about it. He makes a movie because he got paid a lot of money and he knows that the money he got paid is nothing compared to what that movie will make.
Well, yeah. You know? And it's just to satisfy everything that like makes him tick and turns him on. And that's 100% what this movie is. And again, it's like, either you're down for that, you're into it, or you're going to have a tough time with it in general. I had a blast. I probably will rewatch this, or at least sequences of it, more than I've touched anything in his filmography in recent memory.
Just because there's so much going
and
on.
And it also made me want to, like, I was watching stretches, and the stretches of this that don't work as much, where things do slow down and you kind of got to do the plot sort of stuff, I kind of wanted it to be Fury Road. You know, to just be breathless and like tell the story through action the whole time. I don't think he's necessarily capable of something like that. I think he's too like, you know, and the movie again inherently is like it needs more explanation. You need to like give some service to this giant like sprawling cast that you have. So do you have a favorite of the I mean, I already said Melanie Laurent for sure. Is mine, but do you have an other favorite of the six?
I mean, I really enjoyed, I guess, 7, the new one they brought in to see, because I mean, you're introduced
Corey to Hawkins,
Dr. Dre, like you
and he's done a little bit of that. He was on, was he on the 24 revival?
He was, and he was in Walking Dead as well.
Never got to that chunk of Walking Dead,
but you already kind of introduced to, like, it's sad to say, and again, spoiler, if you don't want it, listen, to fast forward 30 seconds. The minute I saw Franco in this and I realized I hadn't seen him in a restaurant trailer, I was like, oh, but this isn't going to end well, you know? And
I think they even, do they throw him on the poster? Because I remember counting and I was like, there's 7. There's 7 on the poster.
Yeah.
It's called 6 Underground. Why are there 7? And yeah, but also the chase scene goes on long enough and he's given enough business.
He's just
that,
in
like,
the car. That's all.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, but I just, if you're counting them.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, why are there 7? So he's in it for the majority of the opening chase, which does continue after his untimely and brutal death. There is so much dismemberment and just body trauma, people being run over, people being riddled with bullets. Grenades and mouths.
Listen, you want to talk about it servicing everything that he likes. This also services everything that he has done and created. Like some of the reasons why you couldn't really, you could shit all over Transformers for the plot and what it is, But if you look at like what was being done with red cameras, what they were doing with special effects, all that, that does, I'm not saying it paves the way for anything, but it does in a way kind of test new limits as to what can be done with the available technology. So the red cameras and the super slow-mo stuff here, kind of a la Deadpool, but also a mix of some of the other stuff he's done. I think it is as much all the tricks he has as a director for like showing you things. It's as much that as it is like, well, the story needs to service the things that I want to throw in the stuff that I really like, you know, as the story goes, the humor and the, you know, the jokes and the angles and all that, but just what they're doing with the camera, where they're putting things, shots you're seeing, and how just like you are wide 1 minute and, you know, bodies are flying everywhere, and within 2 seconds you're close in this. It's a crazy wild ride. I would love to see a sequel to this if you even think it deserves one. I could see it being an action franchise. I don't know where you go after this story. Obviously there's like 5 more names on that board, but at the same time, you know,
the inherent concept, which we're assuming people have watched it by the time you're getting here, I guess, but it's a bunch of people who have a very specific skill sets, who for some reason or another have decided that they need to exit their lives, and so they fake their own deaths after being assisted by an eccentric billionaire played by Ryan Reynolds, who's basically a do-gooder, basically Bruce Wayne, like we said, who wants to take the fight to some terrorists, an evil dictator.
No red tape.
Yeah. So, and I have listened to and read some amazing takes about how this is basically just Michael Bay's like outlook on filmmaking, which is just like, studios are too much bullshit to deal with. They just gotta let me do what I need to do. I'm gonna get all these people that are great at what they do. I'm gonna treat them like shit and not develop any like emotional stuff with them. Like, yeah. So, some great metatextual stuff is out there if you want to read up on that.
Well, now that it's out, I'm gonna go back and look at all the stuff, because I know he was posting stuff, Ryan Reynolds was posting stuff, and that's one thing I've always seen. The Megan Fox of it all back in the day, but I've never seen anybody like just be like, man, fuck this. Like, it was terrible. He was a work. It was like, yeah, it was work. It was fucking crazy. It was work. But goddamn, did I have a ton of fun. You know, I got to do this. I got to do that. Like, it's always just, it's a fucking blast to go and do. And the idea that I can go do this, I can make it however I want to make it, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I don't have to be held to like somebody's bottom line, because they're like, oh, we might lose money. Well, you lose money on one thing, you'll double it up on this. Hollywood, you're right. It's just a numbers game. You know, I think that's why people elsewhere have gone elsewhere to be like Netflix and Amazon to get stuff made, because these companies have enough money to be like, yeah, the money isn't really our problem. It's our content. We'll operate cash poor.
Right.
Mortgages our houses if we need to, but get it out here, have it as something we can show to people. And again, you know, we talk about how like some of his are my favorite, just like, oh, they're on a Sunday afternoon, I'm going to watch them, you know? And so the idea now that it's just, you know, here for me to watch whenever I want, I can appreciate that, because on some level, you know, but that's all his movies might be for some people, you know. I think people think when I talk about him and like how much I really like fucking love the stuff he's done, they think that like, oh, well, you just must be stupid and like you can't see that they're dumb and like the plots are terrible. I fully am aware that that is a thing the entire time. I'm just trying to tell you that the way they're done and the way it's presented, it's enough for me to be like, I get it. It's not, this isn't fucking Shakespeare, but at the same time, I still really fucking love it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I wasn't expecting this to be any different. I wasn't expecting to get into a big plot. I was expecting to know enough to know what I'm watching on the screen and have fucking fun with it. And my only regret is that I didn't pop popcorn to watch it. That's it.
Good point.
Because if I could have gone and see it in a theater, I would have. In a heartbeat.
Honestly, if I saw that it was playing tomorrow, like on the big screen, I would go again and watch it just for the spectacle of it.
Exactly.
And again, those three set pieces work for me, particularly the magnets.
Oh, yes,
the boat at the end, all of that stuff. Some of those shots, man. Like, inside the kitchen, when they take them from one wall
to the other.
The other wall.
And then the knives. The
knives.
Yes. Oh. And then their reaction to stuff, like, oh, God. Oh, God. It's terrible. And just
the aesthetic of it being, you know, quote-unquote, grounded in the real world, like this is actually happening, even though we're dealing with, I'm sound like a total idiot. Turkestan's not a real country, right?
Yeah, I don't.
I would assume it's invented for the movie so that it doesn't.
I mean, it looks a lot like Morocco, but you know.
Okay, but anyways, even with the heightened unreality of everything, still. The stuff they do in here, which it's like, it would be at home in a Deadpool movie.
Yes.
Where you're looking at it as like a gritty comic book, like super over the top violent movie. But because it's ostensibly in our real world, there's just this extra insane factor of like in this first opening, like 17 minute chase or whatever, where you're seeing bodies like flip over cars and like random pedestrians get run over. Just brutality, and it goes by in a blink. Mm-hmm. Like, again, it's this. I feel like some people are going to be either completely turned off by this, like when it starts auto playing on their Netflix when they turn it on, or they're going to be like, "What is this?" But it's it's breathless. I feel like I feel like you are very unlikely to turn it off in the first 20 minutes if you start watching it, because it's just like, you can't take your eyes off of it. Even if you're watching kind of in stunned silence, like, oh my God, like, what is he doing? But it, you gotta see it to believe it. It's worth your 2 hours. If you seriously, you could watch this and just, like, anytime they're just hanging out, just fast forward. Like, basically just watch the opening 17-minute chase, the Hong Kong set piece, and the boat, the magnets at the end. And know that they're killing a dictator for political reasons that are probably way more complicated than the movie actually wants to deal with. But never mind. It's a Michael Bay movie. Okay. I had a lot of fun with it.
I did too. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I'm definitely
watching. Is it your number one of the year? No. You don't have to reveal it right now. I'm just asking.
It's in close contention. I'll give you that much.
Okay. I was getting this movie was tailor made for you. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Yeah. So, go check out Six Underground on Netflix. Let us know what you thought. TheArchivE@gmail.com. You can shout at us on Instagram at TheArchivE Network, on Twitter at TheArchivE, and on Facebook. You can just search
TheArchivE. Let's use the hashtag Twitter, hashtag Bayboys.
Yeah. Hashtag Bayboys. And you can give Six Underground a thumbs up or a thumbs down, but know that your thumbs down will not be counted because this is a fun movie, and you should just respect it.
Yeah.
And let it wash over you in all of its gratuitous glory. Yeah. Seriously, had a blast. Highly recommend it.
Definitely. Me too.
Only mildly offensive. Not as extremely offensive as some other Bay movies I could think of. Okay. Anything else? I think that's it. This has been our mini review of Six Underground. Go watch
it.
We didn't spoil
it's
too much.
Great.
Like, yeah.
I try not to spoil too much. Like, you know.
Not that there's really spoilers for this, other than just, I mean, every single frame of it, you want to be like, dude, did you see this? Did you see this? That's why you should watch it with somebody. I thought maybe we would save it and, like, watch it today together, but then I was like, no, we should watch it in advance because we got other stuff we had to do. Anyways, until next time, where I guess we'll be back with our top 10
of the year.
And also stay tuned for the decades list as well. For this episode, I have been Noah.
And I have been Gavin.
We've been the Blanchard Brothers. And we've also been, for this episode.
And only this episode.
We've been Bay Boys.
Bay Boys. We've totally been Bay Boys, bro. Totally into it.